today's readings, like the readings every day, but today's readings are full of treasures more valuable than gold. St. Peter speaks about faith, it's more precious than gold, and then Jesus tells this rich man that if he gives away his possessions, he'll have treasure in heaven. Before we get to these readings, though, I'd like to take a moment or take as a starting point today's saint, St. Augustine of Canterbury, the Apostle of England. Not the Augustine that people think of usually, the great St. Augustine, Doctor of the Church, St. Augustine of Hippo, North Africa. Maybe this St. Augustine was named after that other great St. Augustine. But this is the one who is, a Roman or Italian, and he's a monk, and he's sent by the Pope to evangelize the English. Part of the reason why this comes to mind is because I've shared this with many of you. I have this desire to make a Catholic or a pilgrimage to Catholic England. First on the list is the Holy Land, but the war interrupted that or postponed that pilgrimage. So second on my personal list is to go to England and honor the Catholic roots. Nobody's interested. No one wants to go to England except me, so I don't know if it will ever happen. But that's just in my heart. And I think of saints like, and maybe you think of saints like Thomas More and John Fisher, the English martyrs under King Henry VIII, including my 15 times great-grandmother, Blessed Margaret Poole. When I was in the States last month, I picked up a secondhand copy of a book on Catholic England. It's called Faith of Our Fathers, and the subtitle is A History of True England. So it's written by a very fierce Englishman who's a Catholic convert. So his perspective is that England is really a Catholic country, and as I started to read the book, I realized, well, it's much more complicated than I realized. You have to go way back before Henry VIII and way before Thomas Becket and all these people that you might think of in the Middle Ages. You have to go way back to the early years, first century, the first Christians. In fact, they have a legend in England that Joseph of Arimathea went there. So, I guess every country has its desire to go way back. So Joseph of Arimathea supposedly brought the Christ child to the English shores, or after Christ died, Joseph of Arimathea was a missionary to Western Europe and England. But aside from legends like that, you can think, for one striking example, Saint Patrick, Apostle of Ireland. Ireland is even further from the furthest edge of the Roman Empire, even further out than England. And the Irish welcomed the Catholic faith before the English did, or actually, it's just too complicated. There's so many different tribal conflicts, and there's the Irish, and then there's the Celts, and there's the Angles. That's what I call them in England. And then there's the Picts and the Britons and the Saxons and all these different tribal groups. But by the time of St. Augustine of Canterbury, paganism had again pretty much overrun the English. There were still Christians there, but it was a mess. And when Augustine was sent there with a whole bunch of his brother monks, he heard about all the problems, and he got intimidated, and he went back to Rome. He said, I don't want to do it. And the Pope said, no, go ahead. This is the will of God for you. And he went there, and he had remarkable success. That's why he's Apostle of England. He went there in the late 500s, 598 or something like that. And he died in 605, so within a few years, his earthly journey was over, but he had reestablished the Catholic Church in England, and it remained there pretty strong until Henry VIII. Anyway, one of the reasons this came to my mind is that on Saturday, we had another English saint, Saint Bede, the Venerable Bede, and it stood out for me as I looked at his little biography. He's the father of English history. And the guy lived in the 7th century. I said, how could he be the father of English history? How much English history was it? I mean, ecclesiastical history, church history. He wrote a whole book on the church history of England in the year 700-something. So I said, well, there's a lot more history here than I was thinking of. And he came only, if Augustine died in 605 and Bede was born in 673, it's only 70 years later that Bede comes along and he grows up in a very well-established Catholic environment and lives in a Catholic monastery and has access to Catholic literature and scholarship and culture. And so there's a lot more going on here. Okay, well anyway, that's just English history, but St. Augustine of Canterbury is one of the instruments God used, and he turns out to be a kind of reluctant instrument. Perhaps we can connect his experience of setting out to do the will of God, to follow the instruction, being obedient to the Pope and going out to spread the gospel. And here's a man who's already consecrated to God, right? He's a consecrated religious. We can connect his experience of setting out with all goodwill and then faltering. We can connect that to this man in the gospel, the rich man, who approaches Jesus with every good intention. Good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life? I'm on the path here. I want to continue. I want to accomplish the goal of eternal life. And Jesus says, okay, follow the commandments. And the man says, I've done that all my life. I've been following the commandments. Okay. Jesus, looking at him, loved him and said to him, you're lacking in one thing. So he's following the commandments. He's a good man. He's got a good intention, but he's lacking something. And this is where I think we can connect it to St. Augustine of Canterbury. St. Augustine is a good man. Of course he's a good man. He's doing good things. He's dedicated to God. But something was missing. And so when the challenge came up, he faltered. This man, the challenge is to not rely on himself, on his accomplishments, on his fulfilling the commandments, on his virtues, on his possessions, but to rely on God. That became the challenge. And I think something happened to St. Augustine. It's going to mean leaving my comfortable monastery and my well-established way of life and my acceptance as a leader of these brothers. If I'm going to run into opposition, well, I don't know. So what was Augustine relying on? I guess not yet entirely on God. And isn't this all of us? This is all of us. We're all this rich man. We all have a limit to our trust, or we discover a limit. I shouldn't say we have a limit. We discover a limit when we're put to the test and we say, oh, I didn't know it was going to be this hard. I didn't know it. I was going to run into this much opposition or rejection or suffering. And then we have to think again, do I really want to continue this journey? And when we ask ourselves that question, we say, well, I can't. It's impossible. I don't have what it takes. And Jesus affirms this at the end of the gospel. It's impossible. They ask him, who can be saved? Who can be saved? If this rich man can't be saved, who's a good, dedicated rich man, if he can't be saved, well, who can be saved? And Jesus says, for men it is impossible. That's pretty encouraging. It's impossible. It's impossible for us on our own. It's impossible for us when we rely on ourselves, on our possessions, on our good intentions, even our virtues. It's not impossible for God. And this is the key to the whole thing, right? It's not impossible for God. All things are possible for God. So if we are relying on God, there's no end to what can be done. You could even evangelize the English peoples of all people. Even the English peoples can be converted. And spectacularly, just like St. Patrick discovered much earlier, more than 100 years earlier, that the Irish peoples could be evangelized because all things are possible for God. Well, this takes us to one of the central lessons of today's first reading. This is the beginning of St. Peter's first letter. St. Peter, who knew what it was like to rely on himself, and who knew what it was like to run into personal limitations and failings, just like the young man, just like the rich young man, just like St. Augustine, just like all of us. I mean, Anyone who's striving to be a faithful disciple of Jesus Christ runs into this level of impossibility and this experience of failure. Well, Peter knew this. And so he says, okay, rejoice. Rejoice now. So that the genuineness of your faith, which is more precious than gold, may prove for praise, glory, and honor. What a great gift we have in faith in Jesus Christ. And then he says, for a little while, you may have to suffer through various trials. For a little while, you may have to suffer through various trials. That is true of every disciple of Jesus Christ. We have to suffer through various trials. We think it shouldn't be like that. We don't like it to be like that, but that's the way it is. And God uses those very trials to purify and strengthen our faith, which is more precious than gold. Gold is tested by fire, he says. Gold is purified by fire. Well, what's more precious than gold? Faith. And so faith has to be tested by fire. And when it is, it becomes purer, stronger, even more precious. Because then, nothing is impossible. If our faith is not purified, then we're going to keep running into the impossibility of our human capabilities. But if we can accept the process of being purified in faith, accept this little while experience of suffering, it bears tremendous fruit. St. Augustine of Canterbury is an example. So is St. Patrick, so is St. Peter, so is this rich man. Actually, he didn't accept the trial. He didn't accept that the love of Jesus and the call to something greater would cost him so much. He didn't accept it, so he went away sad. We can hope that he came to his senses after a while and realized how unhappy he was with all his money and followed, but we don't know. So that's the challenge. If we want what's most precious, we have to suffer the loss of what's less precious. That's the way it goes. It's a great process. It's painful. It's contradictory. It seems impossible. But with God, all things are possible. And it's on that basis that we build our genuine hope. A hope for, yes, for a fruitful life, but especially for eternal life.